This is NRL Boom Rookies.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Boom Rookies presented by ESPN. I am Matt Bungard, and with me today, Nick Campton. Hello.
That's right.
Look, this is weird for you. We're doing the show, and the Canberra Raiders have won a game.
I know. This is something very new and different for me. If you guys listened last week, you would have heard how pessimistic I sort of was about Canberra's chances and all that. But the boys turned up. They did a lot of their... made it hard for themselves, as they often do sometimes, but they got away with the win. Happy days. 14, 15, 17, 25 wins in a row against Cronulla. You got to love it.
77 wins in a row against Cronulla.
I can't believe they've won 150 games in a row.
Cronulla's actually never beaten Canberra.
I don't think Cronulla knows Canberra exists as a place. It's just they got a whole lot of L's.
We will get to that game at the end of this little segment. But first of all, we've got to jump all the way back to Friday night. And the team of the podcast... the Dolphins, the Redcliffe Dolphins, I should say, 36-20 winners over the Knights, and they set up a blockbuster 3-0 clash with the Broncos this week.
Could not be more excited for that game on Friday night, but I think this could have been a little bit of a trap game for the Finns, because you know they've had the two really good victories to start up in Queensland, and then they've got this Broncos game on the horizon, and I think it would have been very easy for them to look past the Knights a little bit and maybe not turn up and give this their absolute best, but... to me, they just sort of really stayed on the job through the whole match and really kind of ground out a good result against a Knights team who I thought played pretty committed and did put in and did really have a dig, but just sort of ran out of troops and ran out of quality guys in there. They had three blokes on debut after 68 guys got injured against the Tigers, and they were on a five-day turnaround, so there probably were always going to be limits to how much they could put in, but I thought there were some more really good signs for the Dolphins. Amiso Tabuai-Fidow's ball playing, I thought, was really strong. That's a really good step forward for him. The way that he sort of went to the line on the first Tessie New try, I thought, was extremely impressive. It was another example of what we talked about a couple of weeks ago with Isaiah Katoa, a good example of tempo running, so controlling the tempo of his run as he sort of digs into the line. And that's something that only really skillful ball players are able to pull off successfully. And I didn't really have him pegged as much of a passer over the last couple of years, but it looks to be something that he's kind of really added to his game, which is really good. Our other guy, Connolly Lemuelu, I thought was really good on the left edge, combined really well with Sean O'Sullivan to set up another try for the Hammer. And while Dom Young did have a bit of a shocker for the Knights, I thought Tessie New was really good in getting the hat trick over Young, and especially late on for his third try when he makes the second effort after contesting the kick to get off the ground and keep the play alive. And
yeah.
For someone who was nicknamed Hessie New in his Broncos days, it's really good to see that sort of hustle, and those sorts of second efforts are hallmarks of Wayne Bennett teams, and it's just really good to see guys picking up that sort of stuff.
Yeah, Tom Gilbert led from the front as well. He was fantastic. I think he got the 6 Dellium points in this game. Which is still hilarious to say the 6 Dellium points.
I know, it's ridiculous.
He was awesome.
Yeah, Gilbert was great. He really led from the front. And I think once Daniel Safidi went down for the Knights, there was a real sort of void in the middle of the field, and Gilbert just really took control of it. I really couldn't be more impressed with what he's done in these first three games as a Finn. You know, he's someone that plays with a lot of aggression and a lot of intensity, but he seems to have really found that balance between, you know, walking up to the line and maybe occasionally stepping over it, but never in a way that makes him a liability for his team. And for the really aggressive players, that can be a hard balance to find, and he seems to have found it as a pretty young man, which is great.
Well, when Cody Nikorima scored that extremely soft try, I thought that they were just going to romp this game in. But credit to the Knights, they came back and they utilised their main weapon, which is Lachie Miller running really fast in a straight line.
Yeah, I thought Lachie Miller was really good in this one. With so many guys out, the Knights did need someone to kind of step up and sort of show the way a little bit, and Miller doing it after he's only played, I think, what is it? It's less than a dozen first grade games, I'm pretty sure. What really impressed me, like, of course, him going the distance off the 20-metre tap is really good, right? That's great stuff. But we all know how fast he is and how good a support player he is. I think that's been a real hallmark of his game, especially this year at the Knights. But the other try that he scored, the one where he hit Fitzgibbon short and then backed up again on the outside, that to me showed, like, a rugby league sense that a lot of guys who come over from other sports sometimes never find. You know, I thought Miller looked really, really comfortable, a lot more comfortable with passing. I thought he looked a lot better in shape. I was actually quite impressed by how well he sort of fitted into what the Knights were doing, considering that he doesn't have that much experience at the top level of league. So I don't know what's going to happen with the Knights halves and with Ponga down the line and all that sort of thing, but they've got a real live one in Miller. And even though he's only a couple of games in, I think there's a really, really high ceiling there. He's not just a fast guy. There's a bit of footy sense there too, which is really great to see.
Yeah, it's weird. Like you look at their key men, him, Hastings, Gamble. I don't think any of them played particularly badly, but they were just overrun in the end.
I thought Hastings sort of faded out of the game after a really strong start. He put that nice kick in for Tyson Gamble. And I think to win this game, the Knights really needed like a bit of a masterclass from him. And like masterclasses are hard. That's why they call them masterclasses. They don't call them apprentice classes.
That's true.
Do they? But yeah, the Knights very much just sort of ran out of troops on this one. And that made the margin error for so thin. When you do have Dom Young, one of your best players, when he does have a bit of a shocker, it just puts so much pressure on the rest of the team and all that. So it's a funny thing to say about a team that conceded six tries, but I thought they did play with a lot of ticker. And Knights fans are probably a little bit sick of hearing that. They're probably a little bit sick of gallant losses or whatever, but there might be a little bit more to this Knights team than
we originally thought. Like, apart from Matt Croker, they got literally nothing out of their bench. So,
well, it's just a bunch of kids.
No, I'm not blaming them at all. It's just an unfortunate situation that they were in, which we touched on last week in the preview show. So not overly surprising that they were pretty solid and then faded late. I think if you were going to draw up how this game was going to go, it went pretty close to how most people would have expected it to.
Yeah, except I did say I didn't think there was going to be many points, and then there was 56 of them.
So. 56 is a lot of points.
I'm wrong all the time except for when I'm right.
It's all right. I'll tell you who else we were wrong about. The Grand Old Club, because they lost 20-18.
They did. You want to take the lead on this one?
Yeah, look, so I don't think that losing two games to start a season is particularly worrying. But what I am worried about is the way that they seem to lose these games. They seem to lose these close games against big teams in big games, as big as a game in round three can be, in the same ways every single time. They outline break these teams. They outrun these teams. But it doesn't matter because they bomb tries. They give gift opportunities to the other teams. They give up points in opportune moments. I think that's second week in a row they've conceded a try in the last opposition set before half time. They shoot themselves in the foot. Cody Walker sees the red mist and he seems more interested in starting arguments and fights than winning the football game. And it's just an all too familiar story at this point. Like, this seems like the same things that go wrong every time they lose to Penrith or the Roosters or whoever go wrong in the same way every single time. And yeah, there's another 24 rounds of football to fix it, but I've seen that exact game that they lost on Friday night 6 to 8 times over the last 3 or 4 seasons. And how can I think that they're going to learn and be different from it this time? Once again, they lost a guy in the first set, which doesn't help. It messes up your forward rotation, all that stuff. I get that. But when you're 10-0 up in a game like that, I mean, there's really not much of an excuse if you want to be treated like one of the competition heavyweights to just fall in a heap like that. And I know they bombed some tries. They bombed 2 tries in like exactly the same way, which was pretty remarkable, with AJ breaking down the left and then the last pass not sticking. But like, with the amount of ball they had, the amount of chances they had, like, I thought Campbell Graham was outstanding again. And they're just not capitalizing on these situations when they need to. And then it just all goes to shit. And I don't know how they fix this hole they keep falling. They're going to come out this week and maybe they'll put 40 on Manly and we'll forget about this. And then they might play the weekend Storm the week after that and put a score on them. But then in 4 weeks' time when they play Penrith again and they lose 18-12 or 16-10 or 14-10 or some in exactly the same way, we're going to be sitting here again and I'll be like, how do they fix this?
Well, I was going to ask how you think they can fix this, but it sounds like you're sort of at your wit's end with it a little bit. Do you think it's just a matter of execution? Because they did create
a lot of chances
on Friday night. Like, Campbell Graham did have a strong game, but like he's in the open field.
He's got right? the blinkers.
He did have him a little bit, and it was a great tackle from Tedesco, but like, I didn't think Graham really tried to position his support or anything like that. The Tass one's a bit different. The Tass one is more just a great play from Joe Manu. And that's something, those are things that, you know, it was a great individual play, but you can't exactly be relying on guys to sort of knock the ball out of blokes' hands or whatever.
No.
But do you think it just is a matter of sort of icing those opportunities? Because there was another one that I think they had just before, the set before the Brandon Smith try, where they had some really nice run shapes set up, and I think Cody Walker kicked it and it just trickled dead a little bit.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So, like, they did have the chances
It's weird, right? Because I think that in all three games this year, Damien Cook and Latrell Mitchell have played really well in all three games.
Yeah.
But I thought Ilias was great in that first game and Cody was okay, but I don't think... I think both of them have been pretty poor the last 2 weeks. And Cody started very slowly last year, if you remember. He didn't get his first try assist until the Good Friday game against the Bulldogs. But, yeah, for all the talk about Lachlan Ilias, which, you know, people are rightfully questioning whether he can make the step up, whether that game in round one was a flash in the pan. And I know that we joked a bit about how he was going to be, you know, the next Blues halfback.
Those were jokes?
Oh, I mean... Yeah, we very seriously said that he was going to be the next Blues up. But this is like, I love Cody Walker. I think he's one of the most talented rugby league players I've ever seen. And I still think he was the best player in that grand final, even though he threw that interception. But you get games like this where he gets frustrated, whether it's because things aren't going his way, whether it's because they're not getting calls they should be getting from the referees or whatever it is. And then he seems more interested in trying to go people than trying to win the game. And it just frustrates me because he's so damn good. And he's shown such a level of increased maturity off the field in this play. We all know about Cody Walker's backstory. We all know about the sort of rough and wild times he had in his early 20s. It almost ruined his rugby league career from ever happening. But this is a guy that's really worked hard off field in the last couple of years. He won the Ken Stephen medal last year, for God's sake. I mean, this is a guy, him and Latrell, done a lot of work in the Indigenous community. But for some reason, he still has that... Not necessarily would I call it immaturity, but he still has that sort of these flashes in these big games where he just lets his anger overcome him.
Well, him and Latrell both play with, I would say they play with a bit of an edge, you know what I mean? And I think for both of them that's part of their strength. You know, part of their strength is that they are, you know, they are willing and they are brave and they'll stand up to people. And when they're pissed off, they can sometimes channel that into great footy, but sometimes it doesn't quite go that way, you know. And it's like anything. A lot of the time, a player's weakness is the underside of their greatest strength. And I think that's what we're looking at with Cody Walker. You know, I think he'll be fine. I think things will work out a little bit. But yeah, this was one where he just, to me, frustrated's the word. I thought he looked frustrated with the Roosters. He looked frustrated with the refs. I think he looked pretty frustrated. With himself and all that sort of thing, but switching to the Roosters, I thought this game was a big step forward for them, and the biggest reason for that was Warrior Hargraves and Brandon Smith. We talked a little bit last week on the show about how the South Sydney bench might be an opportunity for them to get over the top of the Roosters, and Trent Robinson made the very smart decision to switch Smith and Warrior Hargraves to the bench late. So I think he sort of bet that the Roosters could kind of weather the storm early. And then Brandon Smith could come on, play the rest of the match once the sting's out of the game a little bit. And then Hargraves comes on and Hargraves just does what he has done for 1,000 years
He's
now. Like
73 years old.
I don't know how he keeps doing it. I wrote a little bit about this over the weekend, but he's just, he is kind of one of the last of the old school enforcers. One of those guys who you can feel the difference in the game when he comes on. And a lot of the Roosters guys said that.
He didn't get a single Dally M point, by the way.
I know, that's insane. Especially given that he ran for more meters.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, obviously, a lot of the times when the judges are lazy and weren't paying attention, they'll just go to the stats and pull it up, look at meters. He led that as well, in addition to like all the intangible stuff that you just talked about. Yeah, so it's crazy that he got no recognition.
I thought he was fantastic. And especially given that he hasn't played a lot of footy over the last sort of... he only played, I think, 5 minutes in the World Cup or whatever, and then he didn't get much of a preseason, then he didn't play a trial, so he's coming in pretty cold, and he just goes out there and he just works him. Like, man, I have enormous respect for him as a player, and I don't think it matters if he can do this every week anymore. I think if the Roosters just roll him out and he has to just have to dig deep for the big games,
yeah,
which you know he can always do, and it just made such a difference for them. I thought Lindsay Collins was a really good running mate in the middle of the field for him again. And Brandon Smith, someone that, you know, people talk about a lot because he's a high-profile guy and he's a big-name recruit and everything like that. And after two rounds, he'd had a bit of an unhappy start to life as a Rooster. And he said after the game that he was really disappointed with how he went in the first 2 weeks. But I thought he was really strong and I thought he showed some of the things that make him a unique dummy half. You know, that try that he scored from 20 metres out untouched. I know it was a bad defensive read from Lachlan Ilias, but that's the kind of running threat that Smith can really provide, you know. And I think he always comes into seasons maybe not at total peak fitness, and he sort of works his way into them a little bit. In 2021, when he won Hooker of the Year and had a fantastic season, one of the first games of the year, I think it was round two or round three or something like that, the Storm played Para, and Para beat him. with a last-minute Mike Acevo try, and Smith had a bit of a shocker throwing a few bad passes.
I remember that, yeah.
And even the Melbourne fans that we know in our lives were blowing up and saying, oh, no, he's got to play lock. But it was just he was just sort of working his way into top nick, into top condition, you know. And I know he battled through a fair bit of pain to play on Friday night. I know his ribs are really troubling him, and they have been ever since that Felice Kaufusi hit.
Yeah.
But he sort of said, he goes, I really wanted to be a part of this game. Like, this is part of the reason I came to the club, because I wanted to experience this rivalry and all that. So I think Brandon Smith does have, like, the true steel in him. And I'm still very confident that he'll end up as one of the buys of the season by the end of the year. And I think this was an important step towards that.
Yeah, it's weird. It was a good, really good game. Great stadium. Atmosphere is fantastic. Big crowd. All that stuff. And, yeah, the results aside, I think both of these teams will not be too concerned with their relatively slow starts to the season.
Oh, they'll definitely meet again when the stakes are higher. Speaking of high stakes, you want to talk about Jackson Paulo a little bit?
Yeah, I said I'd quit the show if he scored a hat-trick, and he nearly did. People will need to understand that my words are not binding. I say a lot of things. like when I call Lachlan Ilias lockdown Ilias after he makes a tackle, that's not... That doesn't mean you can turn around and use my words against me when Brandon Smith runs past him 5 minutes later, Mitchell. But, yes, that sucked.
Yeah, and well, I got to tell you, I was actually quite impressed with Paulo, because I think it was pretty clear that Souths were going to target him, because if it's a back three of Tupou and Tedesco and Paulo, like, with due respect, of course you're going to target Paulo, because one of them's the best player in the world and the other one's one of the best wingers of the last 10 years. So Souths were going at him pretty hard, and he had a bit of a rough start. He dropped a bomb and he got caught out of position for the Alex Johnson try. And when that happens, it can be really easy for a player to drop their bundle and lose their confidence. And,
yeah,
you know, we've even seen that from Paulo in the past. He had a couple of tough games for South Sydney last year, including that really tough one against Penrith.
I thought it was a pretty standard Jackson Paulo game, to be honest.
Mate, he ran for about 190 metres.
That's fine.
Scored two tries, like blew past AJ for one of them.
He also scored tries at South. I thought it was... He had some mistakes. He had some good things. It was the Jackson Paulo experience. I thought he played
I thought it was one of the best games he's played in first grade.
Jeez, and, all right.
Yeah, mate, I'm telling you, I thought he was...
He didn't really do a moonwalk, though. So.
Mate, is it Trelians or is it Jacksonville up there?
Jacksonville was very funny.
That was good stuff. I did like that. I can't believe it took us that long to cap
on. But I was... had a good night.
I like seeing players who have had those really tough times come out. And
yeah, no, look, I'm happy for him. I never thought it was, like, obviously not a bad guy or anything. Like, it's just that relationship between Souths and him ran its course, and he's clearly found a good spot on a good team. Still in Sydney, didn't have to really, like, change his life or anything like that. Just sort of moved a couple of suburbs over to go to training. And, yep, score some tries for a team that might win the comp. So he's pretty much where he was last year. So good for him. That's fine. I had a fun night. I don't think I've been to that stadium since last year. Oh no, I went to the Matildas game against Canada, but yeah, great stadium.
Got to get there if you can, guys.
It's really, really great.
Really special ground.
I was devastated afterwards, though. We went back to one of the Irish pubs on the walk back, and they were out of free hats.
On the chosen people's day as well.
Didn't get a free hat.
Disgraceful.
Didn't get a free hat on St. Patrick's Day. That was the real L.
Disgusting.
That's all right. But, you know, it's fine. I'll be worried if they lose to Manly this week. Then we can start to panic.
I do love it when you panic, because it doesn't happen often.
It doesn't.
You're very secure in yourself most of the time. So when you do panic, you don't know how to deal with it. It's great. Whereas I am in a constant state of panic.
You are. I'm sure.
So I live in the darkness.
You do. Molded by it. The Titans, 38, Melbourne. This game was off its head.
This game was absolutely fucked. It was so great.
Why is I realise that this is a very milquetoast take, but footy's been really good this year so far.
It has. It's been
like, there's been really very like even like if you look at this week's results, right, it's like every game was close, and the two games that weren't close, the Dolphins blew them out late and the Broncos blew them out late. Those games were also close.
I got to catch myself there. I just said it was high quality. I don't know if it's been
but
it's been close.
It's been drunk.
It's been close. And if you can't have good footy, have close footy. Weird footy.
But I loved this game. This was as weird as it gets. I mean, people talk about meme games. This was right up there.
Oh, it's one of it's like,
is it a meme
like
season?
Me. A meme season? Oh, maybe. Well, 2020 was a meme season.
That's true.
I think. Can you have meme seasons?
I don't know, but
close together?
This game was hilarious.
Oh, I tell you, like, so the Storm, for the most part, you know, over the last 20 years, are a very controlled, composed, and, like, efficient footy team. The one thing that the Titans can do is get in sloppy point shootouts down in the muck, and the Storm made a fatal mistake they got involved in a Titans-type game, and they are unprepared for that sort of thing. The Titans live in the slop. They eat the slop. Their father was a mutter. Their mother was a mutter.
Yep.
I'm telling you, do not get into one of these games with these guys because they can't do much, but they can get in weird point shootouts where strange shit happens, and they've been able to do that for years. So that 2017 Storm team, maybe the best Storm team that's ever existed, they only lost three games, right? Two were in Origin, and one was 38-36 to the Titans up at Suncorp Stadium.
Crazy game.
In a very similar game to this. You know what I mean? They got into a fight they weren't prepared for, and they were dealing with a team that they didn't fully understand.
Khan Pereira's a little hezzy to score that try.
I'll tell you, I feel bad because after we wrapped Will Warbrick a bit a couple of weeks ago, he's had two tough ones.
Billy's out there chucking up bricks.
Billy Bricks, man. It was tough stuff. But Khan Pereira obviously still has some rough edges on his game, but he's greased lightning, man. He just left Billy Bricks absolutely behind. And you don't see many straight up in and aways anymore.
No, you don't.
It's sort of gone out of the fashion a little bit. So to see something like that, where it is the classic in and away, like something out of 1978, was fantastic. That was probably my favourite play of the game. But
I enjoyed the 5 minutes where, what we thought was maybe a send-off wasn't even a penalty for a high tackle by Justin Ollam.
Okay, so I was watching this game at the pub. I had a bucks on Saturday night, and we were sort of congregating at the pub, and the game was on in the background. I didn't have the comms on.
Mm.
When the shot first happened, I thought it was clean. I didn't think he got him in the head. It looks gnarly because of the whiplash or whatever, but I thought Ollam just jammed him like PNG, like a little bit of Kumal justice, you know what I'm saying? And I thought that was a real hallmark of the game for the first maybe 25 minutes. It was really physical. They were really smashing each other. And I was like, guys, it's about 5,000 degrees. If you keep doing this, things are going to open up because everyone's going to be too tired.
But I love that straight after that. What happened. Straight after that, Tino tried to come out and put some shots on. It was fantastic. Yeah. I loved it.
That's it. Well, I love it. I love it when there's that sort of physicality and one team ramps it up and the other team tries to answer. But I thought there was some more really good signs for the Titans. You know, I thought Foran was pretty good down that left edge, except for when he got hooked for some reason. I don't know what was going on there. Brimson really strong again. Aaron Schopp had some really nice touches. I thought Mo Fodawaker had his best game in a good while, you know. And all of a sudden, the Titans are sitting pretty at 2-1. I tell you what, Justin Holbrook, Coach of the Year.
People are saying that.
More and more people.
I do love a slow breakaway try, and we had a few of them in this round, but... man, it was nice to see Aaron Schopp in full flight, the complete opposite of that, just tortured him down the field.
The Noonan Shamrock himself on St. Pat, what's the Boxing Day? What's the St. Patrick's Day equivalent of Boxing Day?
I don't know.
Yeah. I put you on the spot there, didn't I?
Yeah.
Got nothing?
No, not at all.
Anyway. But yeah, that's good to see from Schopp. I thought Brian Kelly was really strong on return down that left edge as well. I really like what the Titans are putting together on that left-hand side. With Foran, Kelly, and Fifita. I know the Storm got done, but I think Jonah Pezet showed that he's someone who's going to have a really big future in the league. That's a pretty awesome try that he scored for a debutant, you know what I mean?
Going
40-odd metres. And I thought there were some things to like for the Storm. I thought Sims was good when he came on. I still don't really like him in the middle of the field. And Grant, of course, was exceptional at hooker. And I thought Katoa had some nice moments on the right edge as well. But all of a sudden, they're 1-2 and they're going to be without Jerome Hughes for at least a week, you know, and it's they're really, really
poor old Javier Quartez's hands. What's doing?
Yeah, I was really expecting an improvement from him this year, but it just hasn't sort of happened. He's been plagued by all the difficulties that he's had over the last couple of years. It's like, I think I said it on the preview show, it's like something from Greek mythology. He's blessed in that he can always get to the ball first, but then cursed and that he hardly ever hangs onto it, you know?
Sure.
He's someone I think that they need a lot more for, especially given the injuries that they have had and how skinny they've become in the back line. They need more from him.
Yeah, fuck, there were some sick tries in this game.
Some beauties, man.
Loved it. Rugby league, what a sport. We said on the preview show that we were not going to do the thing anymore this year where we say this team has no chance of winning this game, specifically about the Cowboys-Warriors preview. We said we're not going to do it, and I'm glad that we didn't because the Warriors won this game.
That's what you call growth, people.
And won it handily.
They looked great, didn't they?
They really did.
I thought they were really, really strong. There's a couple of things for me to take away from this. This is the third week in a row that the Cowboys start really fast and then can't go on with it, you know? And it's hard for me to put my finger on why exactly, but This is now three times against three very different teams where they've put on the first couple of tries and looked really good and then just haven't been able to go on with it. So I'm not really sure what's going on there. I thought the Warriors' middles were fantastic. Adam Fanua-Blake and Tohu Harris were really good again. I'm going to talk about Tohu Harris every single week because he's one of the best forwards in the league, full stop. And Fanua-Blake, I think, has gotten back to some of the form that he probably showed in his Manly days a little bit. I think he's had maybe an underwhelming couple of years with the Warriors. He probably hasn't shown his best football, but he was really, really good in the middle of the field. And Wade Egan, who's someone I didn't have a huge rap on. Like, he's a solid enough guy.
Playing well.
But this is the third week in a row that he's played really well. Third week in a row that he's scored a
more
try.
More tries this year than Alex Johnson.
Mate, Lithgow rising up for their favourite son, you know. And Fanua-Blake's got that crazy haircut at the minute that makes him look like a samurai from the Tokugawa shogunate.
Yep,
so
it's terrifying.
Maybe he's just like embracing the Bushido or something like that.
Could be.
And it's kind of getting him there. But I do have to put my hand up and say that I got one wrong here, because when we were previewing this game, I said, oh, I don't know about the Warriors 2-5. I don't really like the look of it. Where are the points going to come from? Let me throw some numbers at you. Ed Cossey, 131 metres from 15 runs. Marcelo Montoya, 212 metres from 24 runs. Vilima Vailea, 116 metres from 15 runs. Adam Pompey, 132 metres from 15 runs, including absolutely trucking Val Holmes, one of the hardest hitting defensive centres in the entire league.
It's
weird. All four of them have been all fantastic.
I'm not trying to be a dick. Marcelo Montoya was one of the worst players in the NRL when he was at the Bulldogs.
Yeah.
He was really quite bad. And he's been pretty good a lot of the time for the Warriors. And this was one of his best games.
It's a different coach in different circumstances. But you remember when Ken Malmalo came into the league and he was really, really struggled with his hands. And he was clearly physically talented, but he couldn't get much going. Yeah. And then one year, it's like Steve Kearney just turned a switch on inside of him. And Ken Malmalo learned how to catch and realized he was larger and stronger and faster than nearly everyone else. And that's kind of what happened to Montoya. Like, he's just going, he's just accelerating into contact like an absolute madman, going over the top of people. He was really, really effective.
Yeah, he had a sensational game. Do you worry about the Cowboys at all? I don't know if I'm worried, but like, to lose 13 plus at home to a team that, you know, in pretty trying conditions as well, the Warriors wouldn't be used to that weather or anything like that. Like, geez, I don't know, man. Not great.
Well, like I said, it's the third week in a row that they've had a fast start and really haven't been able to go on with it. I thought Tom Chester was busy at the back, certainly. Like, he's a player with a future in first grade somewhere, but I don't know. I thought there were some pretty bad defensive reads from both of them. And both of the tries that the Cowboys did score came off, I think one came off a fumbled kick and one came off a kick rebound. So it doesn't really augur well.
Yeah, you did say you wanted to see them score points without Josh Drinkwater, and they didn't quite happen.
Yeah, I thought Chad Townsend did what he could to sort of lead him around. And while Dearden ran well again, I didn't think he sort of created this kind of attacking opportunities that we know he can do. But I tell you, I think this is more about the Warriors, you know, with a rookie fullback, and you know, without Jackson Ford, who was so good for him in that first game, they really just dug in and were able to get it done. So it turns out that all my talk about the Warriors over the first 2 weeks is perhaps a little bit justified. I like the trajectory they're on. I thought Samari Martin was really good. I thought his combination with Sean Johnson is one that I really like. I think they complement each other quite well, and you know, they're just finding a nice balance for things, and I don't know, it's good to be back in my old position of, you know, this is it, this is SJ's year, it's finally happening, the Warriors are making the eight, you know.
When he went down injured, I was like, oh no.
I hated it, but yeah, it was, yeah, I don't know, like the Warriors, I think they're gonna surprise a few more of us over the rest of the year.
A sneaky fun game against the Doggies this Sunday.
Whoa, that is fun.
Mount Smart, I mean, 2 p.m.
If that was in Sydney, I'd think about going.
Why is there three games this Sunday?
That is a good question. Is next week Easter? Do we have a weird thing next week or something like that?
Well, the following week is Easter, but no, it's not. Easter's 2 weeks after that. I don't know. There's only two games on Saturday next week.
I don't know. Maybe Super Saturday, that colossus of Fox Sports is finally crumbling around.
Maybe. Well, they were like, well, South's Manly is so big. And Cowboys Titans is the other one. I mean, that doubleheader is enough.
No love lost there.
Exactly. All right. The Brisbane Broncos 40, the St. George Illawarra Dragons 18. We don't have the opening tirade from the editor at large. He's slipping. They've won too many games. I don't think he was prepared for this amount of work. But He hasn't sent it yet. So if he sends it this afternoon, we'll have to put it on question time. So patreon.com/NRLBoomRookies if you want to hear 10 minutes of the Joker giggling about Reece Walsh.
Well, I this game, it kind of went the way that we talked about on the preview show, where the Dragons were able to give Brisbane a real fight for about 70 minutes. And I think they gave Brisbane more of a fight than Brisbane expected, because I thought the Broncos were actually a little bit sloppy at parts in this game. You know, maybe they were, maybe you know, the heady heights they hit in the first 2 weeks were sort of, you know, they were feeling themselves a little bit, as they should. Those were two great wins, but for it to be 18-all with 10 to go, and then you end up put 40 on them. That's a measure of just like how quickly this team can put on points and how quickly they can put them on back-to-back and how many different ways they can score them. You know what I mean? I thought like Payne Haas was exceptional in this game. He is exceptional just about every single week with his work rate and all that. But I thought what was really pleasing is that
they did it on both sides of the field.
They did it on both sides of the field. And it wasn't just Payne Haas running over a smaller guy just through happenstance. You know, I think both times he picked out a smaller defender, adjusted his line, so he was taking.
I love Carrigan's movement on that try as well.
Yeah, and then as soon as he broke through the line, he was looking to pass. I thought it was a show of like smarts and skill as much as it was a show of muscle from Haas. And I thought he really led the way. Carrigan was outstanding, and he's really good every week. But I thought Tom Flegler had probably one of his best games in quite a while. And considering how the Saints pack had really stood up to the Titans last week, I think the Broncos needed someone to go with Carrigan and Haas and Flegler. Flegler really did that. You know, Reece Walsh really strong again. He just fits into this attack so well and gives them so much versatility. And I think it's an important step for Brisbane to have a fight, like get into a fight that they maybe didn't expect, but then they were still able to come home really strong and get over the top of them.
Yep. Their hooker rotation again, I thought was very solid. I didn't think Adam Reynolds had a particularly good game, but he had a couple of really nice touches. He got 5 Dele M points, which I was shocked by.
Yeah.
Look, like, I love Adam Reynolds.
We're a couple of weeks in, but this Dele M stuff is already.
I was like, generally, I thought he was their worst spine player in this game, and he got 5 Dele M points.
Yeah, I didn't think it was one to remember from him. Like how Haas and Walsh just didn't clean up on the votes, I'll probably never.
I thought Fainai did really well under some of those Reynolds bombs, by the way.
He did, and so did Mika Ravalawa too. And
how does that run by Ravalawa?
I love Mika Ravalawa. I really do. I love how wholehearted he is, and I love how he just.
I would do terrible.
We'll just charge into
terrible
anything.
Things to get him on the right wing for Seattle.
And yeah, like that's a good segue to oh jeez, that's a good segue to talk about Saints and.
Yeah.
Ah, man, I think it's a real shame for them that they ended up conceding those 4 tries in 10 minutes. Because for 70 minutes,
anytime you can avoid
right
conceding 4 tries in 10 minutes, you should do it.
Yeah. That's what they don't teach you at coaching school.
No, they don't.
But like there's that Zach Lomax no try just before the Broncos sort of stormed in and got it. And if Lomax had, and that was a really difficult chance, but if Lomax had been able to ice it, then maybe it's a different story. I do really like Jaden Sullivan's progress over these first couple of weeks. I thought he was really strong. I liked that he was that he accelerated into the line like that and took on Ezra Mam, a really good defender, and Kirk Catewell, a much bigger man, and was able to shrug them both off just by picking his spot really well. Tyrell Sloan like had a couple of bad defensive misses in that last 10 minutes, but he's someone as well who I think is taking a lot of steps forward. I really like the way he's linking with the rest of the spine. I do think they had a bit of a problem in the middle of the field. Thought Laurie was good in his first stint. His second stint probably wasn't as strong. Frank Molo really tried to turn up. And Zane Musgrove was someone who did really well again for the second week in a row. But they did look a little bit loose around there late, you know. And you can see after the... I can't remember. I think it's the second Reece. I think it's not the second Reece Walsh try. But it's I think it's the Ezra Mam try. Well, it's one of the tries that they scored. And you can see Jack Bird sort of throwing his arms up and saying, guys, what the hell was that? You know, after Haas sort of trucks over the top of one of the littler dudes. And I think that's the thing for Saints. They're yet to put together that sort of really strong 80-minute performance, but there are some promising signs there for them. So while it is a shitty way to lose, conceding that many tries late, there is cause for optimism for St. George, I reckon.
Yeah, look, at that point, like you look at the score and you go, oh, they got thrashed, but obviously they didn't. And when you do lose a game in that circumstance, it doesn't really matter if it's by 6 points or by 20 points, does it? Like, with the way it went. Like, you can be happy with how you played for the first 70 minutes, I think.
I guess.
It still sucks to lose and still sucks to just give up all those tries late on. But with where they are as a team, I don't think it's a huge deal.
Well, this sort of plays into something that we talked about with Brisbane last week, where they had to stay on the job against the Cowboys. They had to really graft and grind away until the game sort of broke open for them. And that's kind of what they did here as well. It took 70 minutes, which is a long time, but eventually they were able to break the game open. And, you know, like I said, even though they weren't perfect in this game by any means, I think it is an important step forward for them. You know, it's like any team that sort of learns that if they stay on the job, eventually it'll end up working. It just gives them so much confidence. That, to me, has been Penrith's greatest weapon over the last couple of years. Penrith have had absolute faith in what they were doing, and it might take 7 minutes or it might take 77 minutes, but they were always sure they were going to crack the other side open if they just stuck to what they did well. You know, and if Brisbane can take on then that sort of quality, then we are really talking about a top four team, and we are really talking about a team that can make a lot of noise in this competition.
Yeah, absolutely are. Can't wait for that game on Friday. We'll be previewing that. Apparently the Dragons were asked about the Dolphins-Broncos game.
Oh, wow. Not the best. Not the best. I do want to issue a quick request to all our fine, handsome, well-endowed listeners out there. What do we call the Dolphins-Broncos game? Because I've heard like the battle of Brisbane, the battle for Brisbane, which I guess is okay, but I would like better. It if we could think of a name for it, like, you know, how there's the eternal derby, you know what I mean, something like that.
The old firm.
the new firm.
Yes.
I don't know, but if you guys have any ideas, hit us up on Twitter or on the Discord or
Wayne's Patreon World
or whatever. I don't know. That's the banner headline.
Okay, good.
On Saturday morning. But yeah, if you can think of a good one.
WrestleWania.
Oh, that's good. I don't mind that. WrestleWania 1. I don't mind that at all.
All right, we're back. Belmore Sports Ground, Sunday afternoon. I was going out on Sunday night. So at 26-6, I went to go and get dressed. And I came back and it was 26-22. What happened?
Okay, real quick. This is the third week in a row where you've said, yeah, I might come down to the game with you on Sunday, and then you haven't.
It was too hot.
But it is also the third week in a row that I have attended a West Tigers match, so I should probably get...
Yeah, I think one of us has made... One of us has made some good decisions, and it's not you.
So the Dogs, obviously, in that first 65 minutes or so, I was quite impressed with a lot of things they were doing. I thought they left a few points on the board, but they showed that same sort of expansive football that they showed against Melbourne, which I think really plays to their strengths. So Viliami Kikau was really good on the left edge. I think the key to him isn't so much running plays for him or whatever, it's just get him the ball and give him some runners and stuff will work out. And that's kind of exactly what happened. You know, the two long range tries to Josh Adokar were both fantastic. I thought Paul Alamotti
did really well
on that second one. I think it's clear that he's not just...
He's
like
very slowly getting away.
No, he's not just a roughneck. Like, he's not just a strong, a powerful
brute
dude. He's a thinker too. I think he's a smart footballer. The way he was able to position Adokar on that second one, to me, showed a really high level of centre play. And then that try to Matt Burton, like, I know we don't like saying it, but that really was Brad Fittler stuff. Like, loading up that shotgun left foot step, ripping it on him twice, scoring right in front of Sonny Bill Williams, who was wearing a singlet for some reason. I think he wears a jacket when he's on the TV panels, but when the camera's off, he takes it off and he's wearing like a tight white singlet.
I like that.
So it's like, mate, if you got arms like that, why wouldn't you?
It's pretty hot.
I was like Sonny Bill Williams, I'd never wear a shirt ever.
No, it was very hot, to be fair.
But there you go. I think, well, you just said it was hot, and it was hot as hell. Like it was like the surface of the sun. And low key, I think Cameron Seraldo maybe didn't manage his forwards as well as he could have. And then that, to me, was why they sort of faded so far late. So, like, Jaden Ockenbaugh was on the bench. He didn't get used. There was that young fella, Tanner, in his second game. He only played a little bit, and New Brown only played a little bit as well. So, if you look at those Tigers tries, nearly all of them came through, bust through the middle of the field. You know, the Charlie Staines one came from Luke Brooks literally just knifing right up the center. You know, the Charlie Staines one came from Brooks going up the centre. The Luke Brooks one came from the Tigers going wide and then coming back inside and hitting Brandon Wakem, him hitting through a hole. And even the Polo try, that came off a left side shift, but it was because they were able to generate some momentum through the middle of the field. But the Dogs were able to steady and get away with it. But I tell you what, there were some nervous lads in the Belmore stands.
I'll bet. What do you make of them through 3 weeks? I mean, they got pantsed by Manly in round one. They played one of the worst Storm teams I've ever seen in round two and did their job. And then, you know, were really good in this game for an hour and then almost threw it away.
I think they're a team that's developing, you know. Josh Adokar said the other day that Rome wasn't built overnight, which is true, which is true. And they're building a new Rome out at Belmore. Oh. So, you know, it won't happen overnight either. Like, but I think they are a team with a lot of upside. You see some of the things they're able to do, and I think they're far from what they'll become. I thought Hayes Perham, for example, is someone who's going to improve a lot through this season. I don't know how he goes as a passer, but he can beat a guy. One-on-one, he can slip past just about anyone in the competition. He's got really, really dynamic footwork. And as he gets more confidence playing with Flanagan and Burton, I think that's something that's a combination that could become really, really dangerous. And I think the way when Burton and Flanagan and Marnie adjust more to playing together, I think there's a really high ceiling there. So I think the Bulldogs are still a team in transition. They're still a team developing into what they'll become down the line. But I do think there's been some really good signs these first 2 weeks. You know, I think at the start of the season, for a team like this who are changing a lot, all you can ask is bank a few wins and show some good signs. And I think that's what they're doing right now.
And we've complained several times in the show today about the Dally M system. But if it ends with the big Wahash, Jacob Carraz, who's currently the Dally M leader, winning the medal.
Can you imagine?
I'm okay with it.
Can you imagine the celebrations on the streets of Tripoli if the big Wahash wins the Dally M?
Mate, Bankstown Sports Club will just be going off long into the night.
He was exceptional in this game. I thought 272 run metres from 26 carries. Just constantly getting them going. Like, you can see on the Burton try, Burton is able to take on a retreating defensive line because the big Wahash was able to generate some momentum with another really, really strong carry.
It is great. Look, I know it sounds dumb, but obviously multiculturalism is very important to that team, that area. That's where I grew up. I grew up in Bankstown, born and bred. And having a sick Lebanese player on the team is so important for vibes and for just the general tone of the team. They had Hazem for so long. Everybody loved him. He was a hero to so many people in the era. I've got a bunch of Lebanese mates who absolutely adore Jake Carraz, and it's sick.
Well, he's kind of a poster boy for what a Canterbury Bankstown player can be. Like, local junior, grew up supporting the Dogs. Josh Reynolds was his favourite player, and now he's a teammate with him, you know. And it was a really special day out at Belmore yesterday. It was hot as hell, and I thought about not going because it was so goddamn hot, and I was hungover from the Bucks the night before. But I ended up doing it, and I'm really glad I did, because it did feel really special, you know what I mean? And at halftime, they had like a flag parade of all the different a bunch of different countries and a bunch of different cultures and all that. And, you know, there's an Australian one, and it got a cheer, but the Lebanese one got the biggest cheer, you know what I mean? And I know multicultural day, multicultural round, it might just sound like a marketing buzzword or some, you know, some PC box ticking or whatever, but it did really feel like you could feel all the diverse parts of that community at that game yesterday, all coming together for their team. You know, I think they've only got one more game at Belmore this year, but if you get the chance, I would definitely encourage anyone listening to go, because it was really special. It's sort of a different vibe to Leichhardt. Leichhardt attracts a lot of people that just go to Leichhardt, not necessarily Tigers fans. But yesterday, that was Doggies Central, man. That was blue and white everywhere. And I went up to the Belmore Hotel afterwards to catch the Raiders game, and it was like, man, it was a madhouse. People are leaning out of windows and honking the horns as they go past. Like, you would think that they'd just beaten the Panthers or something the way they were going. It was really, really great to see. And it's great to see that fan base so energised, because they have been down for quite a while.
I'm proud of us for barely mentioning the Tigers.
We got to talk about them a little bit.
Brent Naden is fast. The end. Now, like, it's weird, right? Because, all right, this sounds stupid, but I didn't think they played that badly at time. Like, they were very, like, those 200-meter tries is just brutally unlucky. Or combination of bad and unlucky. But I don't think they played that badly.
Well, I thought Clemmer was strong. Like, I thought we sort of said we wanted to see a little bit more from him after not a great one against the Knights. And I thought he really stood up and delivered and led from the front as best he could. I thought Appy Corrissau, again, tried really, really hard at hooker, but just...
And did the Nathan Merritt.
Oh, yeah, that was bad.
Yeah.
That was bad. There's no way around that. But I felt like there were a lot of times he would do what he does and manipulate the markers and duck out a dummy half and look for a runner, and there wasn't one there. And that, to me, gets to the core of the biggest problem with the Tigers right now. They're just not playing with a lot of cohesion. To me, they're not playing...
Yep.
As a team, they don't.
Well, dude,
don't really have a lot of.
There was that set where they were at. There was a couple of moments I remember. There was one where they got a really quick play of the ball. I can't remember who was on tackle four, and the only guy pushing up in support was Alex Twole off the back of it. Like, Corrissau picked the ball up at dummy half and was looking for someone to give the ball to after he scampered about 8 meters, and the only one there was Alex Twole. It's like, that shouldn't be happening.
I know Tigers fans get frustrated with Alex Twell getting so many touches close to the line. But the reason he does is because he's always pushing up.
Yeah.
You know, like, and they have they have damaging forward runners in the middle of the field who should be pushing up
yep.
there as well, you know.
So. And there was one late on where they made a lot, they had a really good set. They were about 10 metres out the ball's line. Luke Brooks just got tackled with the ball on the last play. It's like, Brooksy.
Yeah. I don't know. I kind of just want to leave Brooks alone a little bit. One little thing we should talk about before we move on is John Bateman. He made his debut in this one.
And what a debut it was.
Okay, so to me, we got this was the standard sort of John Bateman game. Like, he tries a couple of things that might work or might not, that gives you a little bit of X factor. Gets in a couple of blues. Some of them he wins, some of them he loses. I think he'll end up being a good signing for him.
I hope so.
And I think why he's an important signing for him, he is someone who can be effective regardless of the players around him. And given the lack of sort of cohesion they're playing with at the moment.
We talk about someone who thrives in chaos. Like
that. Well, yeah, that's it. That's it.
So maybe it'll help. I don't know. And the last game of the rounds, I just watched the KO Mini just before we started playing because I was at a concert last night, missed it. The Cronulla Sutherland Sharks lost to the Canberra Raiders for the 93rd time in a row.
I can't believe they lost to the Canberra Raiders for the 500th time in a row.
That's crazy.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, again, you guys would have heard last week how sort of pessimistic I was about the Raiders' chances, but they really surprised me in this one. I thought they played with a lot more shape and a lot more structure, which was the big criticism I had of them over the first two rounds. I thought after a tough start, Jamal Fogarty was a lot better. He played with a lot more control. Elliot Whitehead's moved back to lock this year, which is a move that Canberra's tried a couple of times in the past, and I've always kind of liked it when they did, but they've never really stuck with it. But he is someone who I think could be that sort of that point forward, that passing middle forward that you know pretty much every team has to have these days. And I thought he gave Canberra a lot more width, and they were able to stretch Cronulla a little bit and get a lot of one-on-one matchups that they were able to win. So Canberra made a lot of the moves that I really wanted to see, and it was really good to sort of see them attack with a little bit more intent, a little bit more of an idea of what they wanted to do, you know. And I thought that was really smart, the way that they just sort of they kept things tight the middle of the field, but only because that's where the meters were, you know what I mean. They were a lot more willing to go wide and hit the edge a little bit. Like, I thought this was maybe Matt Tomoko's best game in first grade, not just with his yardage work, but I think as a strike weapon he did really well as well. And he's someone that, like, he doesn't need a whole lot of setup, and he didn't get a whole lot of setup for his try. Like, if you just get him the ball with something resembling a one-on-one matchup, he's strong enough that he can just make it work, you know. And I think the big problem for Cronulla is how loose they looked in the middle of the field, and it's something that we've talked about a little bit over the last couple of weeks. I don't have an issue with them making meters in the middle of the field. They got a lot of guys who can make good meters, and there were times in this game where they were able to roll up Canberra through the middle of the field quite well. But I don't know, they just looked really loose out there, you know. And Canberra were able to make some really big inroads, like Corey Horsburgh crashing over for two tries. Oh my god!
On Corey Horsburgh, absolutely. On Corey Horsburgh, hot dog day, no less.
Well, do you want to? Can you just get it up in front of
me? I'll pull it up while you keep talking.
Pull it up while I'm talking about Corey Horsburgh. So, Corey Horsburgh is a player I've always had like an enormous amount of time for. To the point where whenever I'm down in Canberra for a Raiders game and I'm on the piss afterwards, I tell people he's my cousin. An absolute lie. He's from Queensland or something like that. But I tell people that, and I say things like, well, yeah, you know, like sometimes you can go a little bit far, but, you know, that's what we're like, redheads, what are you going to do? But I thought he was great. I thought he was great in this one. He was able to, both the tries he scored might both look really, really simple, and they probably were a little bit soft. But when you look at him again, have a look at the late footwork that he uses right at the line, particularly on the second one. The second one, he puts a really little nice move on. I think it's Britton Nicola, and he's able to sort of slide to his outside, and he's pretty much beaten him even before he's caught the ball. So I thought that was really, really impressive stuff from Horsburgh, who I think's had a really strong start to the year, and low key has had a really good 12 months. This is a really big call, but it wouldn't surprise me if maybe if there's one or two injuries to Queensland that Corey Horsburgh ends up coming off the bench for them in Origin this year. I do think that's the sort of ceiling that he has as a player. And, you know, I think, you know, people might take exception to the way him and Royce Hunt were carrying on, but I think that was the problem for the Sharks. They weren't able to sort of stand up to Canberra's physicality in the middle of the field, and that's a problem I think they're going to continue to have as long as their sort of middle rotation is the way it is. Because while Dale Finucane is still tough as shit and very rugged and all that sort of thing. He probably can't play the minutes he once could. And I think they need to get the balance right with him and Cam McInnes a little bit more. Yeah. I think that's the key for them.
Before we move on, I've pulled it up. Try the Corey Horsburgh Big Red Dog, a 12-inch Frankfurt cheese, bacon, shallots, house-made beer and bacon cheese sauce on a Raiders green bun. Available from Snag Street Dogs.
Bring me two of them right now. One for each try.
Well, I think a friend of the show, Brenton Sloan, got one. He tweeted a photo of it. He said it was pretty good. So there you go.
It's Gordon Ramsay himself could not write a...
It looks truly grotesque.
Oh, yeah. I'm giving it a try next time I'm down there.
I mean, if I ate meat, I'd definitely buy it. Of course.
Yeah.
Coloured bun. Remember KFC had the black bun?
Yeah, I didn't. I remember they had the blue. They had the blue and maroon buns during Origin one year. I don't know about that. I don't think I've ever had like coloured bread.
No, because I think the black ones at KFC were charcoal related. So I did eat it. It was pretty good. So.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever had like, because I know they dye everything green around finals time at Canberra every year, but I don't think I've ever had like a dyed green sausage or a dyed green like loaf of bread or whatever. Can you taste food colouring? Does food colouring have a taste?
No, I don't think so.
Does green have a taste? Do colours have taste?
No.
Okay.
Apart from purple, of course.
Purple has a taste.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, it was funny in this one. It very much was like a classic return to form for Canberra, even right down to we're probably going to bugger this up by giving away stupid errors and penalties and all that sort of thing. I'm curious to know, but going back to the Sharks, I'm curious to know, what do you want to see him do with Tricky Trindle and Matt Moylan? Tricky was really good in this one.
They're losing games because dudes just run at Matt Moylan and he doesn't tackle it.
Well, that's why Tomoko was able to get over. He just isolated Moylan and trucked him.
And Tricky was great again. I thought he was their best player against South. I thought he was pretty good last week. And I thought he was pretty good in... I only watched the mini, but I thought he was pretty good in this game too. So
there's a big decision coming there, I think.
A huge decision. Mm. Because Moylan was really good. He was great as Hines' foil last year. But if they're going to... If Tricky's going to keep being their best player every week and Hines comes back, I don't know. But then again, I guess you could argue that once Hines comes back, Trindle will get less touches and his impact on the game won't be as profound. But at the same time, like, I think it's got a better kicking game than Moylan, better defender than Moylan. I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. I think they'll stay with Moylan, but I think they should go try the Trindle-Hines combination.
Yeah, it's something I think they definitely need to consider, especially if they're not going to be able to fix this defensive stuff and they're going to have to try and go shot for shot with points every weekend.
Okay, and previewing Thursday night's game. It's weird, Nick, in a way. This game's kind of flown under the radar a little bit with all the chat about Dolphins-Broncos, but there's a grand final rematch.
I think it's because Penrith had the bye last week. Because
That's true.
If they hadn't all of it, if they played anyone, immediately the chat afterwards would have gone to grand final rematch and all that. But I think the story coming into this one's got to be Parramatta, doesn't it?
Well, yeah.
0-3, tough times.
Roosters, Penrith next too.
Staring down the barrel of 0-5. Roosters will be coming off a bye too. So I think it's really important that they...
I know we said it
something.
Last week, but it is absolute bullshit.
That
they're
is
playing
insane.
Three teams off a bye in a row. Garbage. The thing is, right, they haven't been terrible in any of their three games. They've lost three close games, but that's the reality of the sport and you're 0-3. What do they have to do here to win?
Well, I think it's pretty clear that they've got to fix their defense up. Like that's been the biggest problem the last 2 weeks. Like scoring points has been easy for them, stopping them has been really, really difficult. But this might sound crazy. I don't actually mind this as a matchup for Parramatta.
Yeah, well, they do beat them a lot.
And I'll tell you why. So Penrith are still finding their way in attack, right? They're still working out how to attack without Api Koroisau in the middle and without Viliami Kikau on that left edge. And so they're changing a little bit as an attacking team. And they had so many guys over at the World Cup that a lot of them didn't get a full preseason in. So they're still working on a lot of their combinations and all that. So while Parramatta have been really frail defensively, if they can just dig in a little bit and really turn up and really try and, you know, match Penrith's physicality, which is something that they've been able to do in periods in the past, maybe Penrith won't quite have the attacking zeal to sort of punish Parramatta the way that they were punished by teams like Manly or Cronulla, who just do look a lot more composed with their attack right now than Penrith do. So I'm not saying that Penrith are going to lose or anything like that. I'm saying there might be a little bit of a cause for optimism for the Parramatta fans among us.
Yeah. I want to talk myself into picking them. I really do. But Penrith are going to be so fresh.
Well, yeah, that's the tough part. Penrith will be really fresh because this is a grand final rematch. There will be a little bit of extra heat to a matchup that already has a fair bit of heat. And while I do think that Penrith are still finding their way in attack, they have now had, you know, two games and another 2 weeks of training to sort of iron out a few kinks and all that sort of thing. I think we'll see more minutes for Sione Luke in this game. He got more against the Rabbitohs and the attack just looked flowed a lot better when he was on the field. So I'm looking for that to improve a little bit. I'm just looking for Penrith to take those steps forward towards what we know they can be.
Eels get Madison back, right?
Yes, they do, and that's a really important in for them because it just gives them another quality.
Well, they need another guy.
That's it, and like I don't think we'll see the three starters play the Gargantuan.
No, which is good because the way Penrith win a lot of these big games against good teams, whether it's Parramatta, South, whoever, is they wear you down for an hour and they pull away late.
Yeah, that's right.
And if you're playing against a Parramatta team that's playing these guys for 2 minutes, that seems like a foregone conclusion. But if they've got Madison into the rotation, they can try and keep Barlow and RCG a little bit more fresh. RCG still being paid by Penrith, by the way.
I think Wonga Blake is as well.
They are. It's hilarious.
Doesn't it feel like a lifetime ago that they were on the Panthers?
Yeah.
Like I know it was probably 3 or 4 years from now, but it feels like it was a decade ago. It feels like Penrith were an entirely different club back then. I was watching a thing on YouTube the other day, and it was like from the past 5 years, all the times Penrith's won in the last 5 minutes. So like last minute tries or field goals or whatever. And the first one's from 2018. And Regan Campbell-Gillard was the first person on the scene to congratulate the try scorer. And I got to be honest with you, I'd forgotten he was ever on the Panthers. It had just totally slipped my mind. Even though he was a good player for them, played for Australia and all that, it just completely slipped my mind.
Yeah, it was weird. I think you and I were hanging out with your brother after he just got a tattoo the day Campbell-Gillard signed with Parramatta. I think that's that day.
Might have been. I don't know. Yeah. Timelines are difficult for me.
And that was a long time ago.
It probably was.
Pre-COVID, maybe.
Hard to say.
Mid-COVID. Impossible. Could have been between the waves. I don't know.
Who knows? Man, time ceased to exist there.
It did.
For about 2.5 years. And I'm still trying to get a handle on things. It's not long COVID. It's just me being really stupid. But, like, yeah, time's still slipping away from me a little bit.
It's not COVID. I'm just dumb.
That's right. So I'm going Penrith in this game because I've tipped Parramatta the last 2 weeks and they've let me down both times. I was going to go Manly last week and they made a last second switch to Parra based on absolutely nothing and I got punished for it. So I'm going Penrith in this one, but I think it's important that Parra at the very least give a strong account of themselves because, you know, 0-3 is tough, but, you know, maybe a season's still salvageable. 0-4 and then
Roosters. I'm foreheading into the fresh Roosters.
And that's really tough. That's really hard to come back from.
Although the Roosters won't have Manu, at least. That's true because he gets the 1 week ban and they're not playing this week.
That's
so
true.
A benefit of playing a team off the bye.
There you go.
Swings
silver,
and roundabout.
Silver linings, Para fans. We're finding them for you everywhere. Who are you taking?
Penrith also.
Yeah, I think you got it, don't you?
Yeah.
Simi Renrandra trying the chip and chase. Oh, no, it's Simi Renrandra. Retrata's away, Semi Retrata.
Oh, this will be interesting.
Oh, yes, it will, yes.
Semi Rundrundra.
Oh, he's absolutely buried it. Rundrundra.
All right, bit of news before we get out of here. Sad news for the Titans, Campo. Sam Verrills is going to be out for like 10 weeks with a collarbone issue.
Yeah, it's a real shame. I thought he showed a lot of toughness to sort of play through that injury a little bit against Saints. The other week, Chris Randall, very industrious player, probably doesn't have Verrill's sort of attacking insight though. So that is a loss for the Titans, and it's a shame because I feel like they've found a spine that they quite like and one that could be quite effective for them. Was only given time to settle down, but I guess the Randall Vandals are going to have to mount up for
that's a tough week
campaign.
For the Randall Vandals, but we'll come back stronger.
We always do.
Tell the Danny Levi story. So he's broken his jaw, but what happened at halftime?
Oh, my God. So Danny Levi got hit in the face really early in the game and busted jaw, which you never like to see. That's a really gnarly injury. But apparently there was an NRL official who was dispatched to look for his teeth at halftime because a few of them were sitting on the GIO Stadium turf, which is incredibly gnarly.
Mm.
I hope that never happens to you and me.
Thank you.
I hope we never have to have people looking for our teeth, and I hope we never have to look for other people's teeth. I don't like that for us.
No, I also hope that we can keep all our teeth, because if I lose them, then I just become the stereotype of a South Australian.
Oh, God, yeah, the stakes are really high for you.
They actually are. There's actually a lot of pressure on me to, like, take really good care of my teeth, orthodontically speaking.
It's never been more important. I thought Tom Starling, after a bit of a tough one against Redcliffe, was really good. Was really good.
And now you're going to get your Starling Wolford duo.
Well, yeah, you don't like to see it happen this way with someone getting a serious injury. But if Wolford does come back into the team, I would be excited to see how he would fit together with all these guys.
Jerome Hughes is being suspended for 1 week. I think it should be two.
Well, I tell you what. That do the Tigers now look at that Melbourne game and think maybe this is it.
Can you imagine?
Do the Tigers tragics out there saddle up to
I'm
get
nipping
hurt
this
one
in the bud before we get carried away.
Jonah Pezzett and Tyron Wishart in the halves.
However, I am 0-3 in Coltrane Cup, and the only way I can keep my joke of either I'm going to be 0-X or team is to tip against the Tigers or against Parramatta this week.
Oh, so, you got to tip against the Tigers. You got
to
do it.
I think I have.
The people demand it.
That'll be funny. But yeah, look, nasty high tackle, 1 week, whatever, move on. They're not going to challenge that, are they?
I wouldn't think so.
I wouldn't either. The Sharks have signed former Roosters prop Tuku Hau-Tapua on a 2-year deal. Do you know much about him? 21 years old. Made his debut during their injury crisis in 2021.
Big unit. Moves pretty well for said unit of that size. But I don't know if he's the sort of guy that the Sharks need, because they already have a lot of size in that middle. I know a few Sharks fans were pointing out yesterday that Braden Hamlin-Ewele, Oregon Kafusi, and Royce Hunt are all pretty similar sorts of players. And I would put this new signing in that mold as well. I think what they more need is sort of like a defensive presence in that middle third of the field, more than just like another guy that can truck it up pretty effectively. But you can never have enough front rowers. You really can't.
It's true.
So, you know, why not sign more of them?
I think Felice Kafusi will contest his dangerous contact charge in a bid to play in the inaugural Battle of Brisbane. No, in the inaugural WrestleMania,
yeah. Well, that's what you want to see. Before a big game, you want either a judiciary controversy or you want someone putting time in the hyperbaric chamber, you know? And
it's too early in the season for hyperbaric chamber.
It is, but you save that for finals games. But that's good to see from Finn Diesel. It's good to see someone taking the initiative and giving this the big game status that it deserves. I don't think he'll get off. I didn't think there was anything overly malicious about it. I think he was just going for one of those big wipeout shots and got the timing a little bit wrong. It would really suck if he can't play in WrestleMania, though, because I get the feeling it's going to be like some real hard, rugged Queenslander on Queenslander violence, and I really want Finn Diesel to be involved in that.
And Joe Marnie's getting a week as well for that high shot. Weird one. You rarely see around-the-back high shots like that anymore.
You don't. And I can't believe that that game had a scrap between Joe Manu and Cam Murray.
The nice boys.
The two nicest boys. Yeah. When ridiculous. Nice guys go bad.
Yeah, it's like the other way when Dylan Walker was giggling in Alex Johnson's face. It's like, no, go and do that to Cody Walker. What are you doing?
Dylan Walker really strong for the Warriors. Just one for my NZ freaks.
Sure. Did he unfurl a Pitcairn Islands flag at the end for multicultural? Shout out Ben Quaggs for his favourite piece of trivia.
That is a great one.
All right. Before we get out of here, a quick shout out to the people in the top two tiers on our Patreon subscription service. If you'd like to support us, go to patreon.com/NRLRookies. You'll get access to our Discord server. You'll get a third podcast every single week, the Question Time podcast that we do. You get to nominate a guy for What About This Guy that you'll hear on Friday's show. Merchandise discounts, an invitation to the Boom Rookies meetup at Magic Round, which is always a good time every year. Fourth year now? Third year? Can't remember.
Third year, I think.
Sure, that's a number.
Yeah. And you get to see Bungard upload videos to the Discord showing how definitely not mad he is. I wasn't South Sydney lose games.
Okay, I wasn't mad, but Mitch can't be telling people that I was crying after a round three loss to the Roosters.
Our editor at large is a real agent of chaos, isn't he?
I hate him. I really do. That was awful, because you can't do anything in that situation. You can't just be like, I'm not sad. And yet I tried to. Didn't pay off. Thank you to Chris Avnell, Dave, Nico Hines had the greatest season in NRL history, Rocky and Rafi, Stu, Butsy, Chewbacca Snuffleupagus, Dan Cullinane, David, Doc Hogg, an anonymous backer, Ed Burton, Frankie, Horsburgh scores, bro. Big week for Horsburgh scores, bro. Jace Felix Farmworth, Jason, Jez Plus, Joel Wrigley, John, Josh Brandon, Kick Souths out of the comp, Lachlan Hancock, Luke Charles Smidmore, Luke Ferguson, Matty Jenkins, Matthew Duggan, Michael Murray, Mr. Beefy, Morgan Watkins, My Ding Dong is Hard and I Am Sad, Never Trendy, Pat McManus, Ray Stone Gossard, Reese Brown, Rowan Edwards, Roxanne Clark, Seymour Butts, Shunter, Simo, Ty, TB, The Black Vegetable, The Not So Mature Age Student, Thor Laycock, Tom Hardy, and Was. And West Life's podcast, just loaded there at the end. Thank you so much for your support to everyone in the lower tiers and everyone who just listens. Thank you as well.
Fine, God-fearing folks, all of whom are going to beat their record on the bench press this weekend. It's a big week for everyone in the gym. Get in there and pump that steel. You can do it because you're a patron.
You absolutely can. And I'm going to go do that. Now, anything you want to say before we get out of here?
No.
Fantastic. All right. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back on Wednesday if you're a patron and on Friday with the preview show if you are not. Big week coming up. Say goodbye, Campo.
Thanks, guys. Always appreciate you.
And it's goodbye from me.